Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Sun Devil Source Report podcast here with Blake Neiman, Chris Cartman, Noah Furtado, and Jake Seymour, breaking down some ASU men's basketball, a little season in review for them and the portal news that's been happening recently, talking about ASU baseball and their kind of hilly and rocky road thus far, and then also get into the recently broke by Chris Jaden Rashada injury news and some other takeaways from the press conference yesterday. But let's just start it off, guys. Jake, how you doing today on this Friday afternoon, man?
Doing good, Blake. Had a good week at Muni on Tuesday, football yesterday. So overall, a pretty good week.
Chris, you know, coming off a football presser, spring ball just around the corner. Got to be pretty exciting, right?
Oh, you know, just having an absolute blast. Like, just it's unprecedented times right now. How are you?
You know, I'm chilling, man. Noah, how we doing?
Just watching a lot of college basketball, you know, when I can. March Madness. So it's, you know, I don't know where all our brackets stand, but right now I'm in some solid shape. The key is to maintain all of your Final Four teams and Elite Eight teams. I lost one Elite Eight, but beyond that, I'm okay.
Thanks for telling us the most important thing is to have the Final Four and Elite Eight teams. Move on. That's big news.
Indeed.
Hey, you're 10-6 though, you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But with one Elite Eight team dropped from that equation.
Kansas.
No, it wasn't Kansas. It wasn't Kansas. I had BYU going far.
Oh, okay. I had BYU winning too also. Mountain West has been garbage so far.
They also got seeded terribly, but yeah.
Hey, win your game. Like,
it's true. It's true.
Duquesne's missing their best player, and they still.
But speaking of the NCAA tournament, ASU is not in it this season. They were in it last year. But they do have some former players that are suiting up for different teams in the tournament. Former guard DJ Horn shooting up for NC State. Jalen House from a couple of years ago, he's been stellar at New Mexico. Warren Washington playing for the Red Raiders of Texas Tech. Duke Brennan at GCU. And of course, Devin Cambridge also at Texas Tech, but he is currently injured. And then, so we've already seen the talent loss that Bobby Hurley has had in years past. And he's just lost some more talent recently to the transfer portal as Jamiah Neal, and along with a couple of freshmen in Braylon Green and Akil Watson, both announced this past week that they will be entering the transfer portal. So I'll just start with you, Jake and Noah, what you kind of make of these departures and how this is going to affect ASU after they've entered the portal.
I don't think the departures are necessarily like the biggest thing of concern for ASU because, you know, if you looked at this roster and you looked at the problems ASU had, stem from their half court offense, and really they could only score by using their defense to get into transition, force turnovers, and then get the easy baskets on the other end. So once they got into half court sets, that's obviously when the struggles and the damage kind of started to occur for the team. So I think when you lose guys like two freshmen who, you know, didn't necessarily play a lot of minutes, and a guy like Jamiah Neal, who was a consistent starter, those weren't guys that necessarily would have fixed, I feel like, a lot of some of those issues. So it doesn't really hurt that much because, you know, this team needs shooters. They need guys to help spread the floor more and to kind of ease the load in those half-court sets. So I don't think it's the biggest cause of concern for Hurley or ASU. You know, and obviously with the portal opening up, it's a chance for them to add guys. So if Hurley can go out and find some shooters, you know, maybe at a lower schools level wise and able to bring them up, like Long for last year, for example. He didn't play that much this year, but, you know, Long's an example of that, getting a guy that could really help shoot the ball and help in those half court sets. And, you know, with him coming back too, that could be something that helps ASU in that asset next year.
Yeah, and on that note of just players who will be returning for ASU, as far as right now as it stands, players that have not entered the transfer portal for the Sun Devils, Frankie Collins still here, along with Kamari Lands, Adam Miller, Bryant Selabunge, Sean Phillips Jr., and like you mentioned, Jake, Bryson Long. So with that in mind, Noah, how much are these losses really in effect? Because it seems like the core nucleus that ASU needs to maintain is around that Sean Phillips Jr., Adam Adam Miller and Frankie Collins nucleus?
Yeah, I think the losses are just part of the natural cycle of college sports now. And with Jamiah Neal basically being the biggest loss of the three, I think we all expected him to make a bigger jump this season, stepping into a bigger role with someone like Desmond Cambridge kind of beyond the fold. And, you know, with his scoring ability, maybe filling that similar sort of responsibility offensively, but given their struggles on that end, obviously he was not able to provide the sort of shot making. He took a lot of shots, and in similar ways off the dribble, you know, contested shots, and it didn't really bode well for him in the long term this season. So beyond that, Braylon Green, Akil Watson, largely inconsequential to this team. You could say building for the future would have been nice to have them coming back for, you know, their only freshman. But Hurley, he's always been able to recruit, particularly at the high school level. They've got a good recruiting class coming in with a couple of 4-stars. And from a talent standpoint, they're going to be able to reload more or less in replacing the guys that that we just mentioned, the three transfers, outgoing transfers. So it's not a cause for alarm at all. I think there are a lot more other areas in ASU basketball that are more concerning at the moment, and it's not necessarily tied to those three.
Chris?
Yeah, I have some similar thoughts and maybe some different thoughts. The reality is you do need continuity, and you need to develop players and have roles that people understand, that you go from being you know, in the rotation coming off the bench to then being a starter, replacing somebody who was a starter, and having the same sort of a scope of what you're asked to do on the court. I think one of the biggest challenges that we've seen from Hurley and ASU is there's no continuity from year to year in terms of style of play. I mean, the style always seems kind of chaotic, really, if we're being honest, on the offensive end, and sort of random. But there's, you watch all these other teams, like Noah mentioned March Madness, and you see year after year, their identity is pretty clear from the teams. And I really think that when you're recruiting nowadays, you have to be really transparent about the role that guys will play, that you anticipate them having, what you see for their development, and how that might unfold over a 2 to 3 year period. It's purposeless and has no value if you take Braylon Green and Akil Watson, they think that they're going to play a lot as freshmen. They don't. Then they transfer. Then you replace them with other guys who feel the same way. Then they don't play that much. Then they transfer. We're in an era now, I think, that people understand, where transfers and older veteran players are going to soak up most of the minutes that that teams have, unless you're a really great freshman. But you can't be replacing 8, 9, 10 players a year from your roster. And they had to replace, from last year's team, I think six or seven scholarship players, depending on how we count John Olmstead. And you mentioned, Blake, ASU's not playing in the tournament, but ASU has a half of a team of guys playing in the tournament for other places. And some of those guys were unhappy with the role that they had at ASU, and then they moved on to be successful elsewhere. Jalen House is a really great example. He's a star player. I think DJ Horn, even though he was one of ASU's more important players last year, he was a little bit dissatisfied with the fit and how he meshed with other guys on that type of a team. He's a lot more efficient this year, shooting the ball over 40% from three, really in a great fit at NC State. So what I'm saying is, so much of this comes down to like how you mesh with the other players on the team in consideration of what the coaches are trying to do from an overall standpoint. So like Jemiah Neal, right? Is Jemiah Neal the type of player that is most complementary to Frankie Collins and Adam Miller? Definitely not. Because Frankie Collins and Miller, they're guys that should have the ball in their hands a lot, especially Collins. And so what you need is guys who can shoot the ball around them and also play defense and fit in with what you're doing. But then Jemiah Neal is a career under 30% three-point shooter, and he ends up taking the ball on the floor a lot on these journeys that end up with mid-range, low percentage or low value types of shots in what the, you know, the analytics world would tell you about college basketball. So the departure, Neal, he's probably either going to end up going somewhere at a high level where he's going to be a role player, or which he was a very good role player for ASU the prior season. Remember, he went 6 of 7 against Nevada in the first 4 win. It was one of his best games. He didn't need to shoot the ball that much, didn't need to have the ball in his hand a ton. That's what you want. So, but what you can't spend a bunch of money in NIL on Jemiah Neal if you're trying to keep Frankie Collins and Adam Miller, and you're trying to keep Sean Phillips, okay? So what you need to do, as Jake was saying earlier, is you need to surround them with complementary pieces, which primarily consists of guys who can who are 3-and-D players. That's really what you need. You didn't have that enough this year. Bryson Long didn't play as much as he should have early in the season, in my opinion. I said that at the time. He's the best shooter on the team by far. We're seeing in the NCAA tournament guys who are not very athletic making a lot of threes and being very competitive. That Oakland win over Kentucky with Golkey, great example, 10 threes in the game, the least athletic player on the floor, still take down great opponents. So you need guys who are 3-and-D, and these particular losses, not that big of a deal. It is a good sign that the other guys that I mentioned have not gone into the portal yet for ASU. If they can retain them, that would be a very positive thing.
And Chris, I'm going to kind of come right back at you. As Bobby Hurley, we just know that he recently signed his contract extension. He had delayed that for a year. So I guess, Chris, kind of provide some perspective, if you can, on maybe why he waited a little bit. And then now that ASU is moving into the Big 12, Bobby Hurley on board for 2026, and how he needs to lead them in that direction.
Right. So Bobby Hurley is telling people the reason he didn't sign the extension was when it was presented to him, it had a bunch of Pac-12 language in it related to the bonus structuring. And then Ray Anderson shortly after that departed, and there was a leadership void. And then there was some uncertainty about who was responsible or had the ability to make the contract reflect ASU's move into the Big 12. Now, is that all of the truth? I'm sure that is true, but is that all of the truth? I'm not sure. There's some speculation that people have put out there that had he had a better season and decided to take another job and he not signed that extension, that he could have left without a buyout. So that's like the counter sort of, you know, buzz that people have put out there. I have no reporting that indicates that is the case, but I also can't say it's definitely not whatsoever a factor. So Hurley has said pretty recently to me and others that he's working really hard to try to upgrade the roster. He said that the Big 12 is a conference of grown ass men, was the quote that he said. And I think that he understands that now that he's re-signed, he had a bad season. He's not going to get a better or even lateral type of a job. He's likely to be back. And I think he understands that if he doesn't make some serious progress with the roster, that ASU is going to really have a hard time in the Big 12. And we're going to be having a conversation in another year about whether or not he should continue on as ASU's coach. Already a lot of ASU fans, frankly, are kind of ready to move on at this point and feeling like the inevitability of what's going to happen in the Big 12 is looming heavy over ASU basketball.
And it's not like these fans have a minute sample size to work with. Bobby Hurley has now been here 9 years at ASU, and he has a below 500 record overall in the Pac-12. We know the Pac-12 is worse than the Big 12, so the road's only going to get tougher from here. Bobby Hurley has never made it past the round of 64 in the NCAA tournament. So I'll start with you, Jake. Just kind of how do you think Bobby Hurley is going to fare in the Big 12 and kind of the adaptations he's going to have to make as a coach and maybe with his roster as they move toward that gauntlet of a conference?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. On Saturday, Noah and I, we went out to this kind of sports bar in downtown, and we were watching. They had the Big 12 tournament championship game on with Iowa State and Houston, and they put it on, and we watched maybe the first like 10 minutes of the first 10 minutes of the first half, and we looked at each other like, this is gonna be really bad for ASU next year. Like, the Big 12 style of basketball is at such a different level of what Pac-12 basketball is. And you know, you look at all the metrics, KenPom, you know, specifically the, you know, Big 12 is consistently at the top of their rankings, and the Pac-12 has, you know, always kind of been behind in that sense. And you know, it's a league where a lot of the great teams that you think about in basketball in the tournament, like Kansas from a few years ago, right, and you can just go down the list, a lot of those teams came from the Big 12. So it means that there's harder games in your conference, which can help you because now your conference wins are valued more for the resume. But which someone Hurley has talked about, you know, especially last year when they were going for a tournament bid. But on the flip side of that, it also means it's harder to win games because the games are valued more. And, you know, this season, Hurley and company really struggled in the Pac-12 and to beat teams that, you know, maybe they should have beaten. And in the Big 12, there's really no room for that. And the style of basketball is so much more intense, so much more physical than what they're used to, that you almost have to rethink and reevaluate the way that you coach and think about basketball, because you're going to this whole different style, and you got to adapt to it pretty much. And you're doing it, you know, within the next year, pretty much.
Yeah, Noah, just kind of to add to that, I mean, the Big 12, like Jake said, is an elite conference. They arguably, they have my bracket winner in Houston going all the way. They have a lot of great teams that have been in the mix in the conference. Kansas, obviously, a staple in that conference for years. But for ASU to now be a new member of the conference, like kind of going back to the Houston point, they just recently joined the Big 12. So how does ASU try and make that initial impact?
Chris mentioned that a lot of the fans are ready to move on from Hurley. And while we're talking about roster building and how they might put together players that are complementary with guys that they may have coming back, Frankie Collins, Adam Miller, what's best to build around some of those core returners, it just seems to me that at this point in Hurley's tenure, he will recruit a lot of talented players, but not necessarily put together the right, I guess, sort of game plan to have them work the best. It seems more left up to the players, and how talented they are will kind of carry how successful they might be. Two seasons ago when they had Desmond Cambridge, Devin Cambridge, DJ Horn, Warren Washington, obviously loads of talent on that team, but they weren't necessarily really coached in any special way. It was just the culmination of that allowed them to get to first four, win a game there. They probably even had a higher ceiling if you know, a little bit more went into trying to figure out how it would be best for them to play with each other. Obviously, there was a lot of bad shot selection on the part of Desmond Cambridge, DJ Horn. Chris mentions DJ Horn's efficiency now at NC State. Watch him play recently in that tournament and now March Madness. His role is not only, it's not like he's taking less shots, he's taking better shots, right? So all of these factors beyond just, I guess, getting the best players you can, just doesn't seem to be on Hurley's radar. and hasn't been. It's so as they transition to the Big 12, that seems to be a need, like to have to realize beyond just, okay, here are our players, here's what they can do skill set wise, putting a little bit more boundaries, I think, on you know, what is and isn't within their capabilities, who has the green light here, what kinds of shots they should be taking. On previous podcasts, we talked about Alonzo Gaffney, what would be the best way that he can contribute offensively, catch and shoot threes. Don't dribble. If you're dribbling, pass the ball, spot up in another place, move without the ball, all those sorts of things. And I don't think that's a big enough emphasis with, you know, where the program's at right now. And so we're going to talk a lot about players coming in, going out. I just think that ultimately will be the bottom line as to whether or not they can actually punch above their weight in the Big 12.
Yeah, and with that Bobby Hurley freedom style of basketball in mind, Chris, just to kind of round it off, what's your take on what he should be trying to do with his roster as of right now? ASU has those six players still on their roster. They have those five signees, so 11 total scholarship projected players in total of the 13 that are allotted to a roster. So what are you thinking through the offseason Bobby Hurley should be trying to do with his roster construction to give himself the best chance going into the Big 12?
The most important thing about his roster construction isn't even a player. It's adding an offensive coach. he needs to take a serious look at changing what he does offensively. When you look at his 9 years at ASU, only one team was a top 50 KenPom team that also did well in a lot of offensive metrics. That was the GuardU team. And the reason that happened was because Shannon Evans, a transfer addition from Buffalo that he brought with him, and Cody Justice, who was an under-recruited local guy, and Trey Holder, who was a good recruit that they added, those guys and others made a lot of shots from outside. And that masked to a large degree some of their other deficiencies that they had. It wasn't a tall team, didn't have a lot of length, size, defensive interior presence, rebounding, etc. They just shot the piss out of the ball. And that overcame a lot of things. Now, they still didn't have a very good Pac-12 record because of that. And so they, you know, by the end of the season, they were kind of what they were. Now, Hurley has, in the last five seasons, not had a single team that was in the top 200 in offensive efficiency. That is a horrible sign for what's going on. And sort of building off what Noah was saying about this, if you look at ASU on offense, there's a complete, there's a lack of focus. The screens that they set are not sharply set, right? The passing is not crisp and good and smart. The ball movement, the ability to swing the ball, to get it to different places, the ability to run actions that create the types of shots that are best for the types of players that you have, not very good, right? So what happens essentially is, to, as Noah was saying, is Hurley allows so much freedom that they play a style that's just the caliber of shot that they get on average per possession is one or two levels below what it needs to be on average. You watch the tournament, the teams, they're so focused on what they're trying to do offensively and how they need to score the ball with their best players getting the right matchups and or spots on the floor where they score from. That has to happen all the time. And it's just, it's so unfocused with Hurley and ASU. They have improved their defense the last couple of years. Jermaine Kimbrough, assistant coach, has done a pretty good job with their defense. I think 2 years ago in particular, it was really great. Their press has been solid. There's things that you can build off of, but you have to redefine your offensive approach going into the Pac-12, because it's sort of like what Jake was saying earlier and something that I also tweeted about. Are you going to out-athlete the Big 12? No chance. You aren't even going to be among the top half ever in athletes in the Big 12. Are you going to out-physical the Big 12? Never at ASU. You're never going to be among the top six most physical teams probably in the Big 12. That conference had, at one point late in the season, seven KenPom top 30 teams, and the Pac-12 had one, Arizona, at one point in time. And so how can you compete? And I think what it comes down to is you need to have significantly more efficient offense. And that comes from bringing better shooters into the fold and then understanding how to deploy those shooters properly. The DJ Horn thing is a great example. This is someone who has spent 5 years in college basketball now. The ASU season of those 5 years was by far his least efficient offensively. He shot 7 or 8% worse from the field overall than anywhere the other years, several percent worse from three. Why? ASU was a tournament team last year. The pieces were there. ASU was not much worse last year than NC State is this year. Maybe not worse at all in terms of just average talent. The difference is the coaching and the deployment of the personnel that you have. So that's where Hurley needs to spend a lot of his focus.
It's a disappointing ending for Bobby Hurley's tenure in the Pac-12. He finishes with a 79-88 record overall in the conference, 14-18 this season, capped off by the worst margin of loss in Pac-12 tournament history. And ASU lost 13 of its final 17 games, as it happened since 2010-2011 season. Of course, that being before Bobby Hurley's time. So that makes for the worst season in terms of win percentage in the Bobby Hurley era. We'll look forward to the Big 12 next season for when ASU goes there. But to move it on along to spring football, it's just around the corner, getting going on this next week. But some news that Jaden Rashada won't be suiting up for this first little bit. Chris, you broke that news. Have some more insight on that. It's a torn tendon thumb injury. So could you just kind of provide some more details behind that for our listeners?
Yeah, so what we've learned is that Jaden Rashada has told people close to him and at ASU that he was lifting a box while moving apartments or homes. And this was in like late January, early February time period. Don't have the exact date. But in moving it, he felt that he hurt his thumb. And then that led to him getting looked at by the doctors and them determining that he had torn tendon that required surgery. He had this surgery a little more than a month ago. And then there was a pin that was inserted into his thumb to stabilize the tendons, the area. That pin was removed in a procedure within the last week. And he will not be able to throw the ball for at least the first several weeks, probably, of spring football. He's not expected to be fully cleared by the end of spring football, no 11 on 11 or anything like that. Kenny Dillingham told us yesterday that it's possible that he might be able to do some 7-on-7 by the end of spring football. And I think there's a good chance that he's able to do some individual period work, just throwing the ball with quarterbacks, by maybe the middle to the second half of the spring. He, of course, is going to be able to do all of the walkthrough on the fields, you know, taking in everything that you do with the installation of your offense, all the meetings, all that stuff. But it is a hamper for him and for the Sun Devils when you have a quarterback competition that's expected to unfold here between Sam Levitt, the Michigan State transfer, and Jaden Rashada, primarily, with also Trent Borgay looming as your ultra experienced sort of coach on the field type of a third option.
And with that in mind, Kenny Dillingham spoke to us yesterday in his press conference, along with several of his assistants, including his new assistants in Dyron Reynolds and new offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo. So I'll start with you, Jake. What were kind of some things that struck you yesterday at the press availability?
Yeah, just some kind of things that kind of struck out to me. It was kind of starting off too with the injuries. Bram Walden and Xavier Gillery are both also out for the spring, so they won't be able to participate for spring practices. And then Dillingham also mentioned that Emmett Boley, who suffered a season-ending injury against Oklahoma State in the regular season, he'll be back fully cleared, ready to go for spring practice as well. So kind of updates there on the injuries, but just kind of overall, the thing that kind of really stuck out to me from the press conference was Dillingham is really kind of harping on the minimum standard. And I think, you know, for coaches, for any program, it's really hard to say that they're going to set the standard as high as they possibly can be. Like, they say it and allowed it publicly because it's kind of like the sexy thing to say, like, we're going to set the standard so high and be that program. But in reality, there's a lot of firsts, a lot of moving pieces in year number one for any coaching staff, and it's incredibly difficult to get this standard as high as maybe they would want it. So what Dillingham was said is what's important for year two for him is the minimum standards now set. So he used the example of they get lists of people who were late to meetings, late to the weight room, late to class, missed class. And, it, you know, now having one guy who's on that list is a failure. And now that's the minimum standard. So it's continuously for every day, you know, from January when they first got off and went to workouts to spring practices and beyond, it's trying to push the envelope on that and increase the minimum standard. And then by doing so, your standard in general just becomes higher. And that's that was, to me, the biggest takeaway from the press conference is just like their ability to try and continue to raise the standard and focus on the little details, which will help them once they get on the gridiron.
Yeah, Jake, that was something that really resonated with me, too. Chris, were there some other things that you latched on to?
I think I was trying to get at what the offensive approach is going to be this year and how different it might be, and everything that they learned from their experiences last year where Dillingham had to make these adjustments that were very uncomfortable, I think, for him and not really what he wanted to do, you know, style wise with the scheme.
Hence and the swinging gate.
Yeah, right. He even mentioned that a recruit that he was talking to recently, an offensive lineman who was recruited by somebody else, that school was saying, well, you're going to go to ASU to do the swinging gate. And he was like making fun of that, like he doesn't want to do swinging gate, right? His scheme is going to be 60 to 70% of what the offense is this year, with the rest being what Marcus Arroyo brings to the fold. Arroyo comes from a coaching lineage that's very impressive. Includes Dirk Cutter, who's you know, former ASU coach, former NFL coach, Todd Monken, who's been one of the best college and NFL minds in recent years, and others who are really, you know, highly regarded. And so it's sort of a meeting of the minds between Arroyo and Dillingham. They're changing their signals, which is commonly done, but the verbiage is more staying the same of what they call plays within the offense internally. And that is so that the players don't have to learn something different. Arroyo told us that he's the one who's making the adjustment to the way that the plays are called. And I think that's a more seamless thing. It's easier if he's doing that versus everybody doing that. So that was one of my big takeaways. And then, you know, really just a theme that we heard from a lot of the coaches is that this team is deeper, bigger, longer, more athletic across the board. And they need to ramp up their ability to practice harder, more physically. The inability to do that last year cost them by the end of the season because they weren't practicing in season the way that they would have liked to, which then dulled a lot of the fundamentals, and their depth caused a lot of problems by guys playing too many reps. So the sense that they have, what they've conveyed, is that those things are not going to be nearly as much of a problem this year, which then creates a higher floor for this particular team. They think that the team has, you know, shouldn't ever be as bad as what we saw last year due to those particular challenges. And of course, an important caveat to that is injuries were a major problem last year. And in the event that you do have a big rash of injuries, particularly at certain positions, you could continue to have issues. But they, you can just tell that they feel a lot more confident about what they're working with going into this year.
Yeah, so Noah, kind of with that in mind, a new offensive coordinator in the system, Jaden Rashada's injury, some more added depth in size. So what are some things you're looking forward to seeing out of this squad in spring ball?
It's going to be an interesting dynamic to not have Rashada around for spring ball. I remember speaking with Levitt early on in this semester, and he was not very obviously sort of concerned, I guess, about his fit within the program. He was very focused in on what he could bring to the table in workouts, in the day-to-day, to try to earn the trust of his teammates. That was his bottom line. And if you recall, last year's offense had quite a lot of issues with leadership among its best players. And with the quarterback position, now that you're going to have this sort of competition ongoing, I think he has sort of a head start in this regard to try and build that equity with the guys around him. And without going into all of sort of the X's and O's of how he might fit within Arroyo's offense versus Rashada, which really won't be evident to us until we can actually see them side by side, rep by rep, there's an advantage that he'll have with the amount of time, you know, in the spring. So I think that's probably the thing that I'm going to be most focused on, just because that was, you know, when you're going into the recruiting process, Dillingham certainly thinks about these things a lot. He said, okay, you want guys that want to be here. Bottom line, you don't want to convince people to stay. You don't want to convince people to come. You work off of that baseline of interest. And from that, you would hope builds, I guess, a roster that, you know, you can pull leaders from, as opposed to really actually force players into those roles. And it felt like, you know, with their best players on offense last year, that was kind of the dynamic, was trying to I guess thrust people who weren't I guess ready or equipped to lead to have to actually be that kind of figure for the team. With a lot of new players roped in for the spring and for this upcoming season, that's ultimately, I think, going to be an interesting thing to see. Travion Brown's no longer around. Who kind of fills those roles is going to be interesting for season two.
Lots of intriguing stuff, and along with, you mentioned season two, this will be season one in the Big 12 for ASU, and we'll have a premium podcast coming up breaking down all the insight the coaches gave on the different schematics that are going to be changing in the Big 12 and all that good stuff packed into next week's premium podcast. But to round off our show, we're going to talk about ASU baseball. The team has been up and down this season, has had some hills, has had some highs and some lows as well, and currently they're in a low. Team is back below 500, 10-11 now after a embarrassing, to say the least, midweek loss to Utah Valley, and they also didn't play well in the previous game against Utah Valley on Tuesday. The Sun Devils just hit 8 of 57 for the series. That's a 140 average, and that was, they threw three different Utah Valley through three different pitchers on Wednesday, and they were able to no-hit ASU through six and a third innings. Yep, ASU no-hit against a team from the WAC that is 8-13. It's just not a good look for Willie Bloomquist's squad, and he came into the press room afterward and essentially said that he's at a loss of what to do right now with the offense. He's tried to mix around the variables as best as he can, trying to tweak with the lineup and the structure of that, the practice schedule. He's shifted the off day, but Noah, I'll just start with you. We've talked about this after the game on Wednesday, but Willie Bloomquist again is just trying to figure out how to do something with this offense, but like we talked about, it's not an exact science to figure out.
Yeah, the thing with Bloomquist in how he approaches some of these interviews, you know you're gonna kind of get what he's thinking as opposed to what he feels he should say in the moment. And it's an interesting thing to hear, you know, entering your third week of Pac-12 play, sort of a loss at how to move forward from, you know, something that was a really embarrassing performance in a two-game set against Utah Valley, which is like 5 or 6 games below 500. And a team that entered that that one where they no-hit them for 6 1/3 with like over a 6 ERA. In his defense, you know, it's not necessarily a science. You know, their swing paths aren't going to change. They're not going to make huge adjustments in technical terms. Physically, things aren't going to improve or decrease or anything like that. It's a mental thing, and I think where he's at a standstill on how to affect that across the clubhouse. A players only meeting, you know, post game is like one of the things that could potentially help rally a certain mindset among the players. But Bloomquist really at this point feels like he's saying all these things 10 times over to keep a simple approach at the plate, and it's not necessarily translating as consistently as he would like it to. Lineup wise, he's tried to flip that around pretty consistently in recent weeks to try and see what might be a good solution for their struggles with runners in scoring position, because even when they were in Tucson, they were able to take that series primarily based off of the pitching that they got on Friday and Saturday, but they still weren't able to cash in with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, 6 of 35.
Yeah, not a good mark whatsoever in that regard. And so you rope that in with, okay, how does he manage the midweek games to potentially have his players better prepared to be sharp for those matchups? He says they practice on Mondays this season, take their days off later in the week so that they can be like a little bit more into it, engaged as they head into those games. Hasn't really worked out that way, losing to New Mexico last week in the midweek and then having sort of the underwhelming showing against Utah Valley this week. So it's more or less waiting to see what happens. There's not any indicator that things are going to, there's going to be an overhaul of any one aspect of how this team manages its tasks from practice to practice. And to some extent for fans, that can be a scary thought. You know, this deep into the season, obviously there's a lot of games left to be played, but you know, there's very important series with you know, Washington State this weekend, and when you don't have as much figured out as you would like offensively with a team that, you know, to start the season was very strong. I think that kind of leaves them confused as to how to, I guess, bring that level of production back. It would have been different, honestly, if they had these very high expectations for being 14, 15, or 16 deep with their lineup and then just absolutely flat from the get-go. But it's kind of baffling as to how they were able to perform so well against good teams. Santa Clara, a regional team last season. Kansas State was ranked in the top 25 when they played. Ohio State has, you know, some decent upside with what they've been able to show this season. It's and then all of a sudden that just drops off. You know, they come back down to earth, and the culmination of that was the Utah Valley loss. So, you know, right now it's going to be sort of just waiting to see if they can put it all together. Individual performances aren't going to be enough for them.
Yeah, kind of circling back to that Utah Valley at the end of there, you mentioned Noah and reported the players-only meeting that ASU had. And Jake, a theme for ASU over these past couple of weeks has been that accountability aspect that Willie Bloomquist has wanted from his players internally to have a spark within the clubhouse, to have someone take a leadership, vocal leadership, not so much lead by example, because he says he has plenty of that, but needs a vocal leader. And that's just something that ASU is still trying to work through and hasn't quite got yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that he's kind of said since the fall, too. I mean, you know, we go back to the fall availabilities that we attended, talking to Bloomquist. He said that guys like Tobias and Campos, who were leaders in the clubhouse the previous season, were the example guys. And he said that he needed voices to kind of step up and be heard to hold everybody accountable. And so far, and not to blame those guys because it's a collective effort, it's not just those two, but so far there hasn't been, it seems like, a player to step up and be the vocal leader to hold everybody accountable in that sense. And I think, you know, when you look back on it and you look at their hitting was so good in the beginning of the season. Like, they were really explosive, getting the ball in play, capitalizing when they got runners in scoring position. And now you go back and you look at it, and since conference play started, they're 13 for 88 with runners in scoring position. That's a 148 average. So literally, like, the complete opposite of what they were doing. And, you know, Bloomquist said before that he thought there was, when he played back in his day, like, players would, you had to be worried that your teammate was going to throw you down the tunnel if, you know, you weren't performing and weren't being held accountable. And he says, like, his team needs that kind of edge, and he's trying to get that from them. But at the end of the day, he can go up there and say that and explain to them what they need to do, and maybe relay on some of his past experiences. But, you know, it's a different generation, it's a different group of kids, and you can only do so much as a coach. At the end of the day, it comes down to the players to kind of take it upon themselves to adjust and change and to really kind of move forward on that. And if, you know, if they do that, then maybe they can kind of turn the ship in a different direction and start going where they were going in the beginning of the season. But if that doesn't happen, they're going to continue where they're going now, which, you know, isn't in a good spot.
Chris, anything to add?
Yeah, it's a challenge because you're not going to change people's personality types. You're not going to make people that are not that passionate outwardly into really vocal, passionate leaders. I think you guys know I'll say things multiple times and it doesn't necessarily, you know, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't work. That I understand like Bloomquist's concern that too much ends up basically leading to people sort of the weight of it not being felt, and maybe even people tuning you out at some point in time. That's really bad. To go back to something we talked about, we didn't really mention with football, but Kenny Dillingham has put young players like sophomores, freshmen in charge of teams in order to try to get those guys to be trained to be leaders in a way that then carries through as they become older. This particular ASU baseball team, they were already talking about the leadership stuff before the season started. They don't have really these vocal, passionate, drag you by your collar to success type of guys. And that is something that you kind of need, because it's, as Blomqvist has said, it baseball is a very streaky sport. So ASU is going to have another really good run at the plate, invariably, right? But you need to minimize the lows. You need to have more stability. And the stability, I think, a lot of times comes from player accountability, players holding their teammates accountable. And if it's not natural to you and you've never done it before, or you don't think that's necessarily your comfort zone or whatever, that all those things are pretty problematic. And Blomqvist totally wears his emotions on his sleeve, and he's super honest and transparent. And I think if he is going to go all the way to honesty, it would be, I don't have enough FU type guys in my clubhouse. I don't have enough of that. Right. And it's that which he comes from Pat Murphy, who he instilled that, he pressed that every single day into his players. And, you know, Urban Meyer talked about that. A lot of people saw the Urban Meyer documentary about Florida and kind of like how iron sharpened iron and how intense that it was. You can't necessarily do some of the things that a Blomqvist or an Urban Meyer did 20, 30 years ago, because that then starts to become perceived as you being abusive or something. I hate to say that, but that's sort of the way that it is. And yet that's kind of probably what a Willie Blomqvist wants to do, is he wants to push people to their breaking point to show them, actually, that's not your breaking point. We can get a lot more out of you. And that's a legitimate challenge. I'm not sure how you really overcome that other than identifying that as a key ingredient of the players that you're trying to recruit and bring into your program.
Rounding off the podcast here, just to cap it off, although things haven't gone the way for the Sun Devils on the hardwood or on the diamond as of recently, Olympic sports have been killing it so far. Back-to-back Pac-12 titles for the swim squad on the men's side. They won 16 events, broke 11 school records, and 3 NCAA records. The men's swim and dive team will compete for a national championship. They are the number one team in the country next week and try and come home with that national title. ASU Wrestling is currently competing at the NCAA championships. They have advanced 3 wrestlers to the semifinal round, hence locking up 3 All-Americans in 125-pounder Richard Figueroa, 149-pounder Kyle Parko, and 157-pounder Ja'Cory Teamer. Teamer and Parko, each now 4-time All-Americans. ASU second in the team standings at the moment with 37.5 team points. ASU has finished in the top 10 in each of the last 3 seasons. So lots of success in the Olympic sports, but we'll get back to football next week. Spring football will be in action. We'll have all of the coverage, everything you need to know about ASU throughout the spring at sundevilsource.com, including a premium podcast next week on all things schematics and things regarding the coach's approach as they head into the Big 12 next season. For Noah Furtado, Jake Seymour, and Chris Carvin, I'm Blake Neiman signing off and wishing y'all a wonderful rest of your week.